This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hopp, and we're talking about the malaise that affects medicine itself. The book is Back to Balance by Dr. Haley Fisher Wright. And this book really spoke to me because, many of the problems that I see in medicine are beautifully elucidated in the chapters in Back to Balance. And in fact, it's a fun book to read because it's generously seasoned with pop culture references, many of which I got. Dr. Fisher Wright, you got a great sense of humor and a lot of cultural awareness. And I'm going to read a review from Goodreads, which is a place where people rate books. And it got a 5-star rating from a medical student, which is cool. This book had me hooked from the beginning. As a medical student, this book has really spoken to me, bringing about the ins and outs of the medical field from a unique perspective. What really makes this book great is Dr. Haley Fisher Wright's stance as a physician speaking on the ups and downs, in addition to her personal experiences as both a patient and practicing physician. I would absolutely recommend this book to anyone going into the healthcare field or in the healthcare field. So, we're talking earlier about some of the issues that are kind of spoiling medicine, spoiling the enjoyment of both doctors and patients. And you talk in the book, because you're actually from both the medical field, but you also are from the management field. There are these terms that are thrown around, quality metrics and value-based pay. And you are not a big fan of these concepts, are you, Dr. Haley Fisher?
So I think it's a bit of a misnomer that I'm not a fan of these metrics. I think a more accurate way to describe it is that I'm actually not a fan of how we're currently measuring these standards. So for quality-based pay, what we're using for quality, and this is where I have a real challenge, is that for almost for every doctor in the United States, they are spending, on average, about $39,000, to basically just to report quality, not to provide quality, not to make things better for patients, not to educate themselves, not to change their behavior, merely to report. Bit cynical, if you will, about quality metrics, just for the mere reason that it becomes a bit, it's not a behavioral change so much as a check the box you've reported them.
So actually, in a way, you know, so what I can say about that is that I've noticed that doctors are smart. They're proficient test takers. They've made it through, you know, years and years of pre-med, college, and then medical school. They know how to take tests. And in effect, they know how to tick the boxes that ultimately get them better grades, whether or not they're delivering the care that's appropriate. So they're sort of gaming the system. And in a way, it also creates sort of cookie cutter care. Like, okay, you check the boxes, you did everything that they tell you to do, but is that commensurate with good patient care? And that's a big issue, right?
Well, and I don't know that I've noticed that we're gaming the system per se, other than people are responding. You know, there's a business axiom, you get what you incentivize. So what we're incentivizing is the behavior to report quality. We're actually not incentivizing delivery of high quality care.
Right. So unless you had like some sort of expert observer, you know, in the patient encounter each time, what you're getting is like a synthetic metric of good quality care, rather than the real thing of good quality care. If somebody has set up some arbitrary guidelines like, okay, this is a patient with high cholesterol and has had a history of stents, and you need to do this, this, and this, and this, and that constitutes quality care.
Correct. And that is actually where my, I would say, my reticence to commit to quality metrics comes in, because that is not, to your point, Dr. Hoffman, that is not the same as delivering high quality care. What I advocate in the book Back to Balance is that we really need to focus on the outcomes, not the measurement of the behaviors that we're doing. And I'll be clear in saying the reason why we haven't done that is we haven't agreed on what outcomes we're looking for, nor how to measure the outcomes, which is why it's just ever so much more easy to compensate someone for, you know, did you ask them if they smoke? Did you take their blood pressure? Have you checked a hemoglobin A1C? That's a lot easier than saying get their hemoglobin A1C from 7.8 to below, you know, below 6.5.
But, you know, I would point out, even in that example is rife with problems, because you can put patients on powerful drugs to move their numbers, say, to get their cholesterol down from, you know, 240 to 180. But the ultimate outcome is how the patient does, and that outcome may be years hence, or there may be some subjective character to that. What's the quality of the patient's life? Does the patient feel better? Is the patient able to go back to work? And are the patient productive? And are they not suffering from a myriad of side effects because of the drugs? That may not be entered into that equation, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. We haven't. And in addition, I'll build on your example. It doesn't take into consideration the patient's part in keeping their own health maintenance moving forward. So, you know, I think that is reticence, is that we have not figured out how to take all of these factors into account. And so these measurements of physician behavior we can get for quality, but make no mistake, they are not measurements of quality.
Indeed. And so there's another aspect to this, which is what's called value-based pay, which has a lot of doctors kind of demoralized because they feel that they're being penalized for things beyond their control. You know, they have a bunch of patients who don't listen, don't take their meds, don't get better. It's out of their hands, and yet they may be penalized in terms of their incentives, you know, that they won't get their bonus or they won't achieve their milestones and, you know, get that pay package that's at the end of the rainbow.
Agreed. And it's funny, I just had a conversation, not funny, haha. I just had a conversation with a large health insurer on Monday about that, about the relationship between, once again, patient behavior, outcomes, and what we're compensating physicians for, and that really we are not. If you look in the medical literature, how to get patients engaged, there's no magic recipe on that, but that's where I'll poke back to. That's where the art of medicine comes into play in having a good relationship. So we're asking physicians to do both in a certain way. We want to drive down costs, get your patients engaged, but you have to be productive and whatever. And that's why I point, when I talk about how are we going to change healthcare, you asked in the second section, what are the solutions? One of the things that I really point at is moving, there's two things that we're talking about in this conversation. Number one is moving from basically process orientation, which is the quality measuring, to outcomes measurement. And number two is moving from money-based incentives, which is what we do now, and then move into time. Physicians and patients both want more time. Mm-hmm. We cannot get to the outcomes that we need without more time being spent with those patients.
Indeed. And that time can be extremely valuable in a therapeutic outcome. You know, the 3 minutes that you spend discussing a patient's golf game with them could be a really important part of the visit, because that may motivate that patient to stay with a program of medication, lifestyle, exercise, and diet to achieve a goal, because they, you know, they feel more bonded to you or more accountable to you because you've made that connection. So time is an important asset. But speaking of time, one of the statistics that you cite in the book is that for every hour a doctor spends face-to-face with patients, they spend 2 hours entering data, managing referrals, prescriptions, and other types of desk work, paperwork, wrangling with insurers, getting pre-approvals. And I think that may actually be an optimistic statistic, because it may be more than a 2-to-1 ratio, maybe a 3 or 4-to-1 ratio. And that's why, doctors are getting burnt out and many are wanting to retire early and leave the profession. We're losing valuable clinicians.
Absolutely. To your statement, it actually is more than 2 hours per hour spent. So on the statistic, it was 2 hours for every patient encounter, every hour spent with patients. 2 hours was spent on the electronic health record, mm-hmm. and did not take into consideration insurance, prior authorization, fighting with the pharmacy that you're not getting the right medication, yep. et cetera. So it's far more than the 2-to-1 that you highlight. This is leading to a burnout of physicians. It's also, as we talked about earlier in the podcast, it's also leading to a disconnect between patients and physicians as well, which is not good if we're really pushing for better outcomes.
Indeed. So you're involved in medical management consulting. How are you tangibly trying to help the situation? Do you work with hospitals? Do you work with individual physicians to streamline the practice of medicine, to try and create a more humane practice environment? What are some of the initiatives that you get behind? Because clearly, sure. what some of the stuff you're saying is controversial, and it kind of gets in the way of productivity and efficiency. You want doctors to spend more time with patients. You want them to conform entirely to a bunch of arbitrary guidelines and standards. I mean, you're bucking the trend to some extent with what you're saying in this book.
Yeah, absolutely, and I do so with great pride. I'm the president and CEO of Medical Group Management Association, which is actually puts my peer group are CEOs of the American Medical Association, American Hospital Association. So what I'm putting out in a book that has become a bestseller is very controversial, and yet it's absolutely the direction that we must go. What we do is we represent practice administrators and executives that touch almost half the healthcare delivered in the United States. So we have a very big platform to have these conversations. We approach things on a pretty large scale, in the sense that because we have national reach, what we're doing is we have an advocacy office that's working with our legislators, educating them, number one, because a lot of our legislators look at healthcare as a cost, mm-hmm. not from the perspective of covering people. So they have a healthcare, the way I express it is, we have a healthcare finance policy, not actually a healthcare policy.
Mm-hmm.
So our advocacy.
Yeah, because the whole thrust now, is to cut to the bone, cut costs, because we're finding it as a major drain on the budget. But then we're going to compromise the efficiency and effectiveness of our healthcare system, so we're in a bind.
That's the point, and that's why we have delivered the book to several legislators who've actually read it and said, oh, I never understood, because they see physicians as a cost. Mm-hmm. 9% of that $3.4 trillion goes to physicians, and they're actually, on a percentage-wise, probably one of the lesser costs.
Exactly.
In the healthcare
let's repeat that statistic. That is amazing. In the United States, in terms of healthcare costs, only 9% go to the doctors themselves, and yet they are the vanguards of delivery of healthcare. So, my goodness, what a misappropriation of resources, it sounds like.
Well, and that's our point, is for the 9%, and what a lot of policymakers will push back and say, but they're responsible for a large part of the spend with tests, procedures, mm-hmm. et cetera.
They generate. I generate more than I earn for a lot of people. The drug companies, vitamin companies, testing companies, and so on. So yeah, I'm a real rainmaker for a variety of industries for sure.
Absolutely. But the point in this is, if we as providers, if we embrace engage partnerships with our people that are in our practice, we can drive down the cost of care and increase efficiency. That does, and Dr. Hoffman, you've pointed this out earlier in our conversation, that it does take a little bit of a longer range view. In other words, we're not going to be talking about the next 90 days per se, maybe the next year or 2 years or 3 years. And believe it or not, I think insurers are looking at this as well, because we have had some... We are engaged in some demonstration projects with some of the larger health insurers in the United States that we as providers would typically view as the evil empire. Mm-hmm. But actually, they're also interested, for their own reasons, to decrease the cost of care and increase satisfaction and increase quality. So we are actually, one of the roles of our organization is to basically help facilitate those kind of projects, to see if that's a model that we can deploy across the United States.
Mm-hmm. So, some people view the insurance companies, the insurance company executives, they're making out like bandits. And what we need to do is we need to go to a European system. We need to go to socialized medicine, in effect, third-party payments. Is that the answer, just getting rid of this whole layer of bureaucracy, or would it just involve replacing it with yet another layer of bureaucracy instead centered around government?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question, and since we only have a limited time,
yeah, that's a huge
question.
I think
I will hedge up that. So let me give you the short answer. Yeah. I think you have polar on both sides of the aisle. You have polar ideas of what healthcare should be. In the United States, you have to take into consideration the culture of the United States to deliver care. Our appetite for socialized medicine is not there. The other thing is, having looked at many other economies that do have socialized medicine, there's always a secondary system, mm-hmm. of fee-for-service, like we currently have in the United States.
It's in England and Germany. I've seen it. Scandinavia even, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Actually, transparently, some of our largest hospital systems have third-party facilities in the UK, mm-hmm. and it, just like you point out, Germany, yep. in France, et cetera. Yep.
Single-payer creates a business opportunity for them to offer a different standard of care. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even, by the way, even in, we're working with some organizations in China to bring an American medical model to China as well, because there's such an appetite for,
mm-hmm.
it.
Yep.
I don't think that one payer system is the way to go. I think we can take a look at how the VA is, which does deliver good care, but we can look at the horrible inefficiencies and dissatisfaction issues with access in that system to say, is that really what we want to reproduce as a medical system across the United States? And I think for most people, the answer is no. We still have to address the issues. So that's why I'm pushing very hard in the book with our organization to take a grassroots level. I don't think that the answer is going to be having policymakers, large hospital systems, et cetera, drive for change. I think where the transformation must occur is in the medical practice.
Mm, okay. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine take-home message? First of all, there's the book. We urge you to get it. It's Back to Balance, the Art, Science, and Business of Medicine. And that's, it's a far-ranging discussion of what some of the problems are and potential solutions. And then do you have a website, or is there additional information available?
Yes, there's actually resources for, if you are a patient listening to this conversation, there is a website at, and this is my name, Dr. Haley, so it's DRHALEE at DRHALEE.com. And there's resources for patients, resources for people that are in practice, and resources for physicians there. But I think the take-home message of the book is that regardless of what kind of group of people you fall into, you have more power and control than you think within healthcare. The book really does kind of, if you're not part of the healthcare system, gives you a peek behind the curtain so you understand what's going on, the pros and the cons, and I think it really empowers people to change the system in the for themselves.
Okay. Well, I just got my Medicare card having turned 65, and after my next doctor's visit, I plan to get my first dermatology visit in my life because I think I need a checkup. I'll let you know how it goes. Okay.
Good luck.
Because
if you go to the Dr. Hoffman, if you go to the website, there's a sheet on the patients or what the questions that every patient should ask at their doctor's visit. So take a copy of that with you.
Okay, great. And don't let yourself succumb to assembly line medicine. We should demand
Agreed.
More of our health professionals. And they, too, want to offer quality care. They want a system that's going to enable them to exploit the knowledge and expertise and art that they cultivated over so many years of education and sacrifice. They don't want to be thwarted by a system that limits their ability to give good quality care. I think I can vouch for all my fellow health professionals in saying that. So thank you for standing up for positive change in our healthcare system, even though things seem sometimes kind of bleak. It's a great book, and thanks for writing it.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman, for the opportunity to speak with you today.
My pleasure, Dr. Haley Fisher-Wright. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.